Hi, everyone. This is Billy Joe Dahl, and you're listening to Coping with Life, the weekly radio show that is a place for you to go for hope to cope with whatever trials you go through, as well as some compassion to what our brothers, sisters, neighbors, and friends go through. April 6th was Drowsy Driver Awareness Day. And today we have a guest who did just that, drove while drowsy, and today she is paying the consequences of that. I appreciate the emails. It does my heart good when someone tells me how a show has encouraged them. Anyone can send an email to me through my website, billyjodoll.com, www.billyjodoll.com. And while you're there, check out my books, Young Adult Fiction, in which the characters learn to cope with life. Deborah Sanders is with us today. Deborah spent more than 20 years as an educational psychologist in Alaska, in Utah, and in Colorado. During those two decades, Deborah empowered students, educators, and parents with the knowledge and skills that helped to ensure students' success without watering down the curriculum or lowering expectations for kids with disabilities. She won many awards for her innovations during those years. But in the spring of 2003, Deborah was involved in an automobile accident during which she sustained a traumatic brain injury that changed her life. Within 3 years, this highly successful psychologist found herself unemployed and quite possibly unemployable. What has come from this devastation is the award-winning bestseller memoir, A Matter of Panache. Welcome, Deborah.
Hello, Billy Joe. Thank you for having me here.
Well, I'm glad you had the time to visit with me today. Let's get started. I know my first question is going to be a loaded question, but I think it's important to let the visitors know a little bit about the Deborah Sanders from before the accident. Tell us what it was like being a school psychologist for all those years.
I absolutely loved it. In fact, I mean, I was passionate about it. I think it was both my vocation and my avocation. You know, for 18 or so of those years, I was in Alaska, and I, for probably 70% of that time, I was flying around on little planes and float planes and ferries and dog sledding or whatever into really remote villages and working with children and teachers and families in very creative ways. And when I left Alaska, I went to Utah. And again, you know, was working in a rural and kind of remote area in the canyonlands of Utah. And again, was, you know, trying to do very innovative kinds of things and think outside the box, because that had always very much worked for me and for the teachers and families. I loved what I did. I loved it.
I miss it. Reading a little bit of your book, it's really obvious that you absolutely loved it, and I can understand why you miss it. But let's get to your accident then. Do I understand correctly? It happened in the morning?
Yes, it did, and you sound surprised by that, but actually I've since read a lot of information on drowsy driving, and the time I had the accident is not so unusual. But yes, my accident happened at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was on my way to a meeting in Mexican Hat, Utah, which was about 60 miles from where I lived and worked. And I've always known that I'm sleepy in the morning. And so I never scheduled long distance driving in the morning. I never scheduled meetings. But this one time I kind of broke that, and I did do it because there was a very important little boy I was working with, and the only time everybody could meet was at 7 a.m. in the morning. So I got up at 4:30 in the morning and went to my office and did my, because it was a Monday, all those things, you know, you have to do at the beginning of the week. And then I left at 5:45 in the morning to head to Mexican Hat. And I fell asleep at the wheel.
Did you know you were tired? Did you try to do some things to keep yourself awake?
Yes, I'm embarrassingly ordinary. I did all the things that everybody seems to do when they're tired. I had my windows down. I turned the radio up. I was singing. I took two no-dos, as a matter of fact. I definitely knew I was tired. drank a cup of coffee, and I remember driving, I think, 10.4 miles, and I crashed at 22 miles, and I rolled my truck several times, apparently.
When you basically woke up and your truck's on its side, and were you in shock? Do you remember getting out of your truck, or?
Well, actually, what I remember is not actually waking up. I remember jolting awake. Like, you know how you think you just kind of, you know, you're tired and you doze off. You have that microdose where your eyes close and then open up. That's what I recall doing, and I crashed through the Welcome to Bluff, Utah sign. And what I remember is the truck going wildly, you know, and me going, oh, my God, stop, 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 stop. I mean, I was so afraid that the truck was going to go. I was off the highway. And I remember kept thinking, something in me kept saying to stay off the highway so I didn't hurt anybody, you know, so I didn't crash with anyone. Fortunately, it was so early in the morning, there wasn't anyone on the highway. But I did go into the highway and turned around. I was driving south. Suddenly, I was facing north. I have no recollection at all at that point of rolling. None. Apparently, I did. Mm-hmm.
Did you know you were hurt? I mean, were you...
No.
Broken bones or anything else?
No, I did not. And in fact, I initially thought I should call the book No Breaks, No Bumps, No Breaks, No Bruises. The truck was on its side, and I was locked in. Everything was crushed, and the windshield was shattered but not broken. And I couldn't get out. And I was panicky because I could hear this liquid draining, and I thought it was the gas tank. I thought it was going to explode, and I was trapped. And I was absolutely, like, a panic that I'd never experienced. And then there was somebody had come by in a pickup, and they said, are you okay in there? You know, I have a hatchet. And they went and got it out of their truck, and they busted me out. And at that point, I thought I was fine. I said, I'm fine, I'm fine. Like Natasha Richardson said, I'm fine. I said, I'm fine. Well, I need to get to that meeting, I think, is exactly what I said. And they didn't, by that time, there were tons of paramedics there and the ambulance, and they wouldn't allow me to not go to the hospital. They insisted that they take me to the hospital in the ambulance, which they did.
You mentioned Natasha Richardson with the, you know, with her death recently. It's really brought to spotlight head injuries. It seems like a fluke. That how can someone die from a gentle fall on a beginner's ski slope?
Are you asking me if I think that's a fluke? Because I don't. I think that occurs a great deal of the time, it's very common. It's very common for concussions, which. And I don't know how she fell, but I can take a guess, you know, that, I mean, if she even fell on her back, or think how fast you're going on skis. When you fall, your body stops. But, you know, your brain is like, I don't know, like the yolk of an egg. I mean, it's inside the shell, but it's ricocheting in there when your body stops. That's what happened with me, exactly. I was seatbelted in.
Like the shaken baby syndrome.
Exactly. And a lot of, very frequently, when you have that, it doesn't show up instantly. So, first of all, you have adrenaline going. And secondly, the swelling and the bleeding, they don't take place right away. So you don't know until sometimes an hour, sometimes a day later. In my case, and I've since found out that this isn't so unusual, my symptoms came increasingly over days, over several days. So, you know, whereas I had been released from the hospital and told, go home, you'll be fine in a day, my symptoms kept getting worse day after day after day.
So are you diagnosed as having traumatic brain injury, a TBI?
Yes, with a moderate post-concussion syndrome is what they call it, moderate post-concussion syndrome.
So can you describe that to us?
You mean what post-concussion syndrome is?
Yep. Describe your inner dream.
Yeah. Post-concussion syndrome is basically, in a nutshell, it's that the symptoms of the concussion just don't ever go away. The symptoms of, fogginess and difficulty concentrating, sensitivity to light and noise, kind of mental confusion, irritability, memory, tremendous memory problems, disorganization, mood swings, all those things, your judgment's impaired, all those things that you have when you have an immediate concussion, while they do lessen in a post-concussion syndrome, they just remain with you, which is why they call it a TBI, a traumatic brain injury.
So is there anything that can be done to repair that portion of your brain?
I always think there are things that can be done to repair. I think that in our culture and in our society, maybe we don't explore them quite enough. So I don't give up on treatments. I'm looking into right now a lot of non-traditional, non-Western treatments. When I first had the accident, I started with, not with a neurologist, I started with a cranial sacral therapist and an osteopath. And eventually I did have to go to a neurologist. So I think the two, Eastern and Western medical, can combine to help us, yeah.
So can you tell us what you would say the most difficult aspect of having this brain injury is for you?
Wow, that's a great question, Billy Joe. I would have to say it almost depends on the day. On the days when this overwhelming fatigue prevents me from doing anything, it's the fatigue that's hardest. Other times it's that I can sort of have the cognitive energy to do something, but my brain doesn't function very efficiently, so I'm terribly disorganized. No matter how much I try to compensate for that, and then the compensation for that can wear me out. So that becomes really difficult. Other days, I think the hardest thing is that when you have a brain injury, you no longer can really trust in yourself like you could pre-brain injury. You can't really rely on the feedback that your brain's giving you about the world. And so you're a lot more vulnerable, I think, to what people tell you. Not everybody gives you great feedback, in your best interest. I don't know if that makes sense.
What I think I hear you saying is you can't really trust your own brain, but then you really can't trust what other people are saying either, because they're not dealing with or understanding how your brain works.
Well, maybe. I think it's that, let's just little things, all of us, functioning brains or not, we have communication glitches with each other, right?
Right.
You live with someone or you're friends with someone, you have glitches. Pre-accident, pre-brain injury, I would say that I trusted my gut and my own interpretation, my feedback of what happened, so that when I could talk about it with someone to kind of straighten out the communication glitch, I felt confident in myself. Whereas now, if somebody says, well, you said this, or this happened or that, I just assume they're right and I'm wrong.
Okay, so
it's hard.
So learning or wanting to learn or missing trusting your own intuition.
I miss trusting my own feedback from the world. I miss trusting if I know that I did something or said something, that's accurate.
Okay, I'm sorry. Folks, you're listening to Coping with Life, hosted by Billy Joe Dahl, and we're visiting with Deborah Sanders, author of A Matter of Panache. Later in the show, Deborah will shock us with some drowsy driving statistics and give us 7 warning signals that you should not be driving. Deborah's website is deborahsanders.com. That's www.deborah, D-E-B-R-A, Sanders, S-A-N-D-E-R-S.com. Deborah's book is a must-read for anyone and everyone who has suffered or who knows someone who has suffered from a TBI. It is also a must-read for people involved with the educational system or for anyone who loves children. To be honest, I have not been able to finish it. I got through the first section, but with the accident and the dramatic change in Deborah's life, I started to feel so very sad that I had to quit reading it. But I think it's a great memoir and a great inspiration to others, and I encourage all of you, my listeners, to check out Deborah's book, and you can order a copy of her book, A Matter of Panache, through Amazon.com. Deborah, let's talk about drowsy driving specifically now.
I'm sorry, Billy Joe. Can I just say one thing to anybody listening out there?
Sure.
The book is not, it's not a downer book. There's a lot of laughter in the book. And I know, you know, it is, I have heard it's from other people. Sometimes there are those parts that are just terribly painful for other people to read. But in the end, it's really quite an uplifting, it's quite an uplifting book. And the children that are presented throughout the book are just so precious.
I will agree with
really,
that.
Yeah.
You described some children that I felt like I wanted to go out and hug. So, yes.
Absolutely. And they get more and more prominent. This, my story is really told through the story of the children, because that's what my passion was making sure the right things happened for them in school. So I just wanted to say that it's not all so painful.
No, it's not. I didn't mean to allude that it was. It just... Maybe it hit too close to home for myself, but...
Sure.
But let's talk about drowsy driving. Is it really a big deal? I mean...
It's a huge deal. I really was terribly shocked when I started to study the stats on drowsy driving and what it not just costs our nation a year, but... the percentage of people who do drive drowsy, and what it cost them, as it cost me, you know, I mean, it cost me my life as I knew it. Did you want some of those stats?
Well, let me get to some specific question on stats.
Okay.
I'd like to know, have any states passed any legislation to address driving while fatigued?
You know, actually, I know of one for certain, and that's New Jersey, which makes it a felony. If you have an accident and you cause injury, it's a felony. And I'll tell you something that surprises me, is that that's not nationwide. It surprises me that we have these huge campaigns on not driving drunk, but the statistics tell us that driving drowsy is the same as driving drunk.
Well, I was going to ask you that, if it was anything like driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol. It is, you say.
It absolutely is. And the same things, they've done tremendous studies on this, and they've looked at reaction time. They've looked at awareness. They've looked at judgment. You know, they've looked at concentration behind the wheel of a car when you're drowsy, and they've even done the studies where they do them at having somebody drive at 2 in the morning, at 6 in the morning, and at 3 in the afternoon, and they have found it absolutely parallels drunk driving. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but I know that there's one study they did that showed it was a 160-pound man who had 3 gin and tonics within a 1-hour period of time, that the sleep deprivation of 2 hours. So if you got 6 hours of sleep instead of the 8 your body requires, then you're driving drowsy and you're driving with the same levels of reaction time and awareness as a 160-pound man who had 3 drinks in an hour.
Wow.
That's amazing to me.
It is to me, too. Do you have any idea how many automobile accidents there are in the United States that are attributed to driving drowsy? Not driving drunk, driving sleepy.
Drowsy. Well, I do know that, when you do the research, though, it'll say 100,000 crashes per year. But that is a way, way underestimate. For example, my crash was driving drowsy. But I don't believe that it was listed as drowsy driving in the police report. It might have been, but I don't think so.
Do you know how?
So, and I think, of course, the other thing is, if you fall asleep at the wheel and you die, you can't report that you fell asleep at the wheel. It's a way underestimate. Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many people are injured or who do die from these accidents?
I think that the statistics tell you the research is like 40,000 a year are injured as a result of drowsy driving, and 1,500 die. But again, that would be an incredible underestimate.
The 1,500 who die may not be the drivers if you cannot ask dead drivers if they were sleepy.
Exactly. And, yeah. I know that, the cost per year to us, it's $12.5 billion is the annual cost of fatigue-related accidents. And that's not talking medical costs. If you looked at medical costs, it costs the United States $60 billion a year in direct and indirect medical costs. But it costs $12.5 billion in things not related to the medical. That's a lot.
That is an awful lot of money. You ain't no dose saying to yourself, windows open, had a cup of coffee. Yep. Don't these things and other things, like talking to someone else or whatever, don't they help with feeling tired and sleep deprived when a person's driving?
No. And that is probably something that surprised me more than anything. I was really quite, in my book, I have a whole paragraph, where I'm actually describing on my way as I'm driving the truck, and it was shocking to me to read research and discover that I was textbook. That's what everybody does. They're sleep deprived. When you are drowsy, the only way you can make up for that is by sleeping. You can't, even if you do a lot of caffeine, that will help you for a short period, but then it doesn't last very long, and you can't predict the nanosecond in which you fall asleep.
So there is a correlation between poor sleeping and drowsy driving accidents.
I think it's the biggest correlation. I think it's the strongest correlation that they've seen is that, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, and I can't, but I think people that related that they had poor sleep quality were 12 times more likely to be involved in a sleep-related crash.
Wow.
Now, we're a nation of sleep-deprived people.
Yeah, we are.
We are, and we encourage it. We brag about, I only need to get 4 hours of sleep, and I'm working 80 hours a week or whatever. We kind of pride ourselves on it. And that's why I think 62% of Americans report that they drive while drowsy.
Does age make a difference? Young people need less sleep, and middle-aged people or older people need more sleep. Does that make a difference at all?
Well, yes. I think I can't recall right off the top of my head, but I believe that the highest statistics, the kids at risk, or the people at risk, are between the ages of, 16 and 24 or something. Teenagers need more sleep than adults. And their biorhythms differ from adults. So the times that they need to sleep are different. But they need more sleep. And a lot of times, of course, teenagers are the ones getting less sleep. So that is definitely, there's a relationship there. But everybody, you know, I mean, tell you, the car accidents, the fatigue-related car accidents, just, they don't discriminate at all. You can be purple, pink, brown, white, black, I mean, old, young, middle. You're prone to it if you're going to get behind the wheel when you're driving.
Deborah, will you share with us the 7 warning signals that a person is too sleepy and should not be driving?
Yeah, I think, and I'll bet that most people listening to this can say, oh my gosh, that's kind of like me. You know, it's your eyes kind of close, or they sort of start going out of focus by themselves. You know how you find yourself shaking your head because your eyes are having a mind of their own, trying to close. Trouble keeping your head up. You can't stop yawning. You don't remember driving the past few miles. That's a big one. You find yourself drifting between lanes, or you're missing signs. You know, as you're passing, you're missing your exit. Or you drift off the road and narrowly miss crashing. Those are probably the top. Wandering thoughts is another one. You know, you suddenly find yourself like, whoa, what am I thinking here? You've lost that vigilance that we take for granted because driving is almost second nature to us. But those are your signs. I mean, if your head is nodding and you're yawning and your thoughts are wandering and you find yourself weaving, you need to get off the road. You cannot control. That's the absolute number one thing. You cannot control it with will.
Yeah, when your body wants to go to sleep, it goes to sleep. Unfortunately, yeah. When you're driving.
And you cannot. That's the thing I think that just shocked me so much is that, I mean, I was as aware as a person could be that I was tired. And I often was tired when I was driving and would always pull off a nap, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, always. I was sure, I was absolutely sure that falling asleep at the wheel would not happen to me.
Deborah, we have time for only one more question. Now that A Matter of Panache has been published, what's next for Deborah Saunders?
Well, I'm working on a few things right now. I'm doing things like this and getting the messages out there to people both about head injuries and drowsy driving. And still doing a lot of advocating for kids with special needs and their families. And I'm just about to release both a children's book and I'm going to start doing some memoir writing coaching. And so I'm releasing a book on that.
What's the name of your children's book?
The children's book is What Do You Do When You're Sad and Blue? It's really fun. It's just, what can you do when you're sad and blue and the whole wide world seems so big to you?
So
like marshmallow to school.
It's an early grade school then, is the genre for it.
Yes, it's an early book. Mm-hmm. But okay. It's gotten great reviews from the children.
Good. Quickly, we only have a couple seconds. In our correspondence between you and I when we were getting ready for doing this show, you wrote to me and said, quote, TBI is hard, hard road to wander. Please tell our listeners why you said that.
It's a hard road to wander because your brain is who you are. Your brain is what allows you to feel competent in this world and connected in this world. It allows you to feel in control of your world. And when your brain isn't functioning on all cylinders, you lose all of that. And everything becomes a way of compensating for it. And you can do that. You can compensate. But it's not the same as it working.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you for being with us. I really appreciate your time and sharing basically the struggle that you're continuing to go through. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the time.
April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month as well, and next week, Lou Sadler joins me, host Billy Joe Dahl, on Coping with Life to tell his story. And we'll see you then.